So we want her to stay a couple of days.
She spent about 8 months with us there.
Sorry about that. All right. Hello. Good morning. How is everybody doing today? Are you all nice that you're inside and not in the cold? We were talking this morning on the way here about how cold it was, and I've been back for a little over a month, and I still haven't gotten used to it, so I can feel their pain. Like they said, I've been there for 8 months, about between Guyana and Trinidad. I went to Guyana my first year. As a first-year student, and then second-year, you're an intern, so it's a little bit different. You get some more responsibilities and a little bit more freedom. You become more like family. I was there my first year with three other girls, and then my second year I was there with one other girl, so it was, we became like a family, like I said. And the first year you do a lot of studies, and you do a lot of work, and we studied a book called Perspectives. Has anybody heard of Perspectives of the Christian Movement? Well, it's a college-level course, and so you go through this book, and you get a certificate, and you basically learn a lot of basics about how God is a missions God, and how sent the first missionary, Jesus, here, and how he's our example through everything, not just in what we should do, but also in missions. And so we learn about that in a lot of different religions, and you're in the country, so it's a lot different than being here in a mission school. I've been to college, and I've been to school here, but it's a lot different there because you're in the culture, and you're involved in the whole thing. Your second year, you live I lived with a local there. You either get sent out of the country or you live with a local there. And I lived with a local there, and even though I was in the country the whole time, the first year, it's a completely different experience to be there with a family. You get to see the ins and outs of this entire other world. And so it's just an incredible experience, and I would recommend that anybody would go. There's also, I was there for 3.5 months my first year and 3 months of my second year, and there's also Taste and Seas, so if you can't dedicate 3.5 months, my work was very generous and let me go, but there's also a month that you can do, and there's also mission trips, so I mean, it's an amazing place to go, even if it's just a week. It's just an incredible experience.
Thank you, Tiffany. Put your hands together for Tiffany, and at the end, she's also available if you have any questions.
So I'm just going to give you a quick update of what's been going on. This coming June, we will have been in Trinidad for 6 years. It's like we blinked, and it's just hard to believe. But
you can start the PowerPoint.
We went primarily. What we were asked to do was to start a missions training school that would bring people from North America to Trinidad and to learn to live and minister in a cross-cultural setting. So yes, we do that. Tiffany is one of the examples of that. We still do that. But it was also intended from the very beginning to be a partnership with the country of Trinidad and Tobago. And so over time, especially the last 3 years, we have started to do several other things. And so I just want to give you an idea
of
what we're doing. So, yes, we do missionary training. Tiffany already attested to that if you want to come back for further training, you come back as an intern. And that is where your particular giftings, if you love to work with children or if you would prefer youth or if you want to do a bunch of preaching, whatever it is that you want to do, then we try to personalize it when you come back as an intern. And so we find out about what your dream is. What country do you have on your heart? Some people come already knowing where they want to end up. Since they were 12 years old, they've been wanting to go to Africa. Some come and say, I just want to be a missionary. I want to go somewhere. I don't care where God sends me. So we have both. But there's a lot of diversity in Trinidad, which really makes it an absolutely perfect place for a missions training school. You do have several religions. We have a large population of Hindus. We have Muslims, Rastafarians. We have Spiritual Baptists, which is a cult. It has nothing to do with Baptist churches here in the States. And so we have several different religions. And also ethnicities, okay? So you have about 40% of the island are African descent, and about 30% are East Indian, and then we've got Chinese, we have people from Syria, you name it pretty much. You know, the world's everywhere, right? So even here in the United States, you know, cities have pockets of populations from different countries. So we have a lot of different ethnicities that, that come to Trinidad. And so everywhere around us, we have opportunity to share the light of Jesus. We like to develop relationships. I think that's the best way to evangelize. You know, it's hard for someone to hear about Jesus when they're hungry. It's hard for them to hear when, you know, their home is broken apart. So we try to come in. We become neighbors. One thing that Tiffany and Kaylee did this last time is they went through our neighborhood and invited the children to come to our house on Saturday mornings. And we ended up with about 16 that would come and out on our patio, and they would do just a little kind of like a VBS every week. So it's always different depending on who is there. Okay, so we also now teach a missions class for the country, for open Bible churches in Trinidad and Tobago. We've been doing that for 3 years. This includes really other churches outside of open Bible as well. And it is a 6-month long class that they also receive. They graduate and receive certificates when they're done with that. We have a blast. When we have students with us or any team, if we're doing that, we just bring them along. Because everything you do when you're on the mission field is missions. Whether it's talking to a neighbor or teaching a class or going to the grocery store and learning how to use a different currency and, you know, trying to understand if you're getting a good deal when you grab that off the shelf or if it's not. So we also teach those kind of things, practical things, how to shop. We do drive on the other side of the road. That takes a little getting used to when you first come. I thought I was going to die about, 20 times
in the first
week.
It takes a little more work getting used to driving here in the States now.
Yes. So he asked me when we rented this car, and he said, okay, help me remember. If you see me doing something funny, just help me, Pam. So I'm watching the roads, trying to make sure.
I also said, remind me about the speed limits.
Yes.
Because they don't have radar down there, so they don't deal with speed limits.
They really, in Trinidad, there's laws on the books, but that's where they stay pretty much. Everybody does whatever they want. Okay, so we have the missions class. We love doing that. And what's beautiful about that is when we have students with us, then they're able to interact in that class setting with Trinidadians, which is also really good for them. We have helped trips away. We have taken Trinidadians on missions trips. We took them to Guyana, and I don't know where we're going this next time. I don't think it's been decided. The other thing that's interesting, this is what we believe. According to Genesis 12, I think, we are blessed to be a blessing. So what we do as missionaries is we come alongside. We don't try to do our own thing. We don't try to start anything new. We just try to see where can we fit in and help and be a blessing. Well, Open Bible Churches, TNT, have a church in Guyana. And the church had great need. And so they flew us and our students over to Guyana. It ended up being about 2 months for them total. And Mike was there for 4 months of 2014, and I was over there for about 3 months. And so because we had been pastors for 30 years, then that God used all of that too. Because, see, he's writing your story. Everything that you go through, everything that you do is part of the story God's writing for you. And so here we are. We have experience helping with churches, so they did that. And so we went over there, and so those students got two countries for their money, and we were excited about that. We have now started a month-long Taste and See. We have 3 this year. You can talk to us afterwards. We have a table with a few things. If you want Trinidad money, if you want a magnet of us to put somewhere and pray, if you want to sign up for our e-newsletter, or you just want more information, just go ahead and write that down, and we'll get a hold of you. We've had our first college internship. A young man from New Hope, who was a missions major, needed to have cross-cultural training, and so he came and spent a month with us. That was exciting. We hope to see more. Coming from New Hope. We've done a lot of training in local churches, and guess what the newest thing is? I think we're kind of almost done. But there's 90 open Bible churches in Trinidad, okay? And so there was a church that a pastor had left, and they were in transition waiting for the new pastor. So guess who they asked to be the interim pastors? So that's been our newest thing. That was the last thing I thought would ever happen. But the beautiful thing is when God is writing your story, it's an adventure. You never really know what's happening. And we want to encourage you, if you have thought, I am supposed to be a missionary, talk to us. If you've thought, I don't know about living in another country for years and years, but I would like to go get some hands-on training in another country, talk to us. If you'd like to bring a missions team, talk to us. We have brought over 140 people to Trinidad. And we've brought them from open Bible churches, non-open Bible churches, many nations have stayed under our roof.
We've had 10 different countries have stayed in our house.
And we've trained, a lady from a pastor from South Korea who went back and has now, in addition to pastoring the church she's in, she has started another church in another country. And she spent 8 months with us. So exciting. It's kind of like seeing your kids grow up and start doing, you know, what you trained them to do. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So I mentioned the back table. I don't know. Is there anything else you can think of?
Why don't you go to the next slide real fast?
There's Tiffany.
There, Trinidad and Tobago is down here in the very corner. We're 7 miles from Venezuela, last of the Caribbean islands. Next slide. That's what it looks like, how close it is. Next slide. There's some real beauty. I mean,
that's the Caribbean side of Trinidad.
Yeah, we go swimming over here. They call it bathing, but that's a Maracas beach. Next slide. There it is. Just think, and it's warm, and it's warm.
It's between 70 and 90 all year long.
Next slide. This is in deep south. This is an old coconut plantation. This road actually ends up in the water. Next slide. This is the largest open Bible church in the world. They run about 4,500 on weekends. Next slide. That's where we'll stop for the moment.
And I think it's good that you showed First Church. We work a lot with First Church. Pastor Kwamina is the senior pastor. But we also work with a church that is in a squatter community. So we do everything. We work with very poor, and we work with business people. And we just walk in and whatever the Lord is doing, you know, whatever he's asking us to do, we walk in and we do that. So we help at soup kitchens. We help. There's about 4 main churches that we spend a lot of time with, but we've been in many, probably 40, almost 40 of the 90 churches we've actually been in and done something. So we're really happy to be there. We're excited about what we're doing. We're bringing people all the time. We already have a missions trip. They're asking us for spring break in 2017. We've got them coming this summer. We have times that are a little bit more available for trips, but we also are very flexible. So if we've taken families that have come because they wanted their family to have a missions experience. I mean, pretty much anything, we would find a way to do it. So we're excited about it. And, yeah, we are cold, and I'm trying not to complain too much because, you know, you're supposed to have this. Okay, missionaries. They're supposed to just do anything everywhere, eat whatever, go whatever, do whatever. But can I just say, we left 90-some degrees, and I'm feeling it in my body. So I feel like I could be wrapped in a few warm blankets right now. But we are really glad to be here, and, of course, we also get to see the grandchildren. So, you know, that I will put up with cold to be with my grandkids. And, yeah, thank you. So, anyway, that's kind of an overview of what we've been doing.
Let's go to the next slide. No, I'll help you down. So I want to have a new way of looking at the world, and where do we really start? Next slide. There's some principles that really are foundational for us, and the first one is lost people matter to God. A lot of times people, they just don't know where to look. They don't know how to find what's really happening inside. And so we start with this principle that there's lost people, and wherever they are, they matter to God. Wherever they are, God has a heart for them. He loves them. My wife likes to talk about the fact that God so loved the world. It doesn't just say he loved the world, but he so loved the world. He didn't just love the world, he so loved the world. And his heart, we find in Revelation, around the throne, Revelation 7, 9, that around the throne, every nation, tribe, language, and tongue is going to be represented. So the heart of God is for everyone to be represented around the throne. That tells us what we need to be doing, because the first principle for us is that lost people matter to God. Next slide. So we need to see the world the way God sees it. So we start with this understanding that God's heart is for the whole world. He loves the world, but we've got to see it the way he sees it, because the problem is we don't see the world the way God sees it. See, we see it the way it happens in the news. We see ISIS, we see all the problems, the crazy people in Iran and Venezuela, and we see all those things. But God looks at the world differently than you and I look at it. Next slide. So there's things that don't always make sense, like some of these signs. Look at these signs. But you see, in the places that these signs are up, they made sense to them. But we have to figure out a new way of looking at the world, because we look at the world from our perspective, and we have to begin looking at it from a different perspective so we can understand how to touch the world. Yeah, there's a couple of those I really like. I like entrance only, do not enter. That makes sense to somebody. Okay, next slide. Now, if there is flooding, like this was in Guyana outside the Open Bible Church, had a lot of flooding. Georgetown, Guyana is actually below sea level, a lot like New Orleans. And so if it's high tide and there's a lot of rain, you're going to have flooding. But if there's flooding in Des Moines, you know, it's tragic. If you have family down there and it's affecting them, that's tragic. But, you know, if flooding is in Boone, and if it's your house, everything stops. If it's in Des Moines, you're just going to keep doing what you're doing. But if it's your house, everything stops. Next slide. Some of the flooding. If it's your business, next slide. This is in Guyana. If it's your business, you feel it. Everything changes because it's affecting you personally. Now, we typically look at everything we do based on how it affects me personally, and then we go out from there. How it affects me is how it affects us as a church. But we want to look at it from God's perspective. Next slide. I think one of the best ways to do this is look at Google Earth. Google Earth, you start by looking at the entire world like this. That's the way God looks at things. God so loved the world. And then with Google Earth, go to the next slide. You can begin, next slide. You can begin coming down to right where we are. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Now, this is probably some of your cars right there. Next slide. And if you got street view where you are, then you can see picture. Next slide. See, what God does is he looks at the whole world, and then he comes down, funnels down to where we live. And our objective is to figure out how do we fit into the way God sees the world. It isn't how do we get God to fit into our world. It's how do we fit into the way he sees the world. Because his perspective is he loves the entire world. Next slide. So we have to see the world the way he sees it, but then really, after that, it becomes just partnering with God. Next slide. We need to feel what God feels. Bob Pierce, who started World Vision, this is, in fact, it's been on his desk. It says, "Let my heart be broken by the things that break the heart of God." Came during a trip to China and a story involved with that. But this is should express what we feel. Let my heart be broken by the things that break your heart. There's things that don't break our heart. But there's things that break God's heart. If I want to have God's perspective on the world, if I want to have God's perspective on what's going on around us, even in our country, we need to have God's perspective. What touches his heart? What breaks his heart? Next slide. And we need to do what God is doing. I like Henry Blackaby. He says, find out where God is at work and join him there. Now, I'll tell you, Christians do all kinds of things. Churches do all kinds of things. But I like this matter of figuring out what is God doing and joining God there. So we want to partner with what God's not doing, not just doing our own thing, not just planning. This is what we're doing. God, come bless it. But find out what he's already doing and join him. Next slide. What in the world, or what is God doing around the world? This will be real quick. Next slide. This area in the box is the 1040 window, and you're not able to see it all, but next slide. 5 out of every 6 unreached people in the world live in that box. Now, there are 2.3 billion people on the planet that do not have a way to know about Jesus. They will probably go through their entire life and never meet a Christian. Never meet a Christian. We sent a team from our church when we were pastoring in Des Moines to North Africa. They were in a city of 2 million people. There were 30 known Christians in a city of 2 million. There are places around the world that there are no Christians. In Trinidad, where we are, I can take you to a village, 100% Hindu, no Christians. One of the churches we work with, I'll tell you about in a few minutes, 95% Hindu in that area. And this is reality around the world. Now, I can tell you this, even though there's a lot of churched people in Boone. There's a lot of people that don't go to church. Now, we have to begin seeing the world the way he sees it and seeing what's the real perspective. Next slide. Major religions and the annual growth. On the right is Christianity. See, people say Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world. Islam is growing at 1.9%, Christianity 1.2%. It's not an accurate picture because that includes everything from Catholics to Anglican, Episcopal, you know, everything. Go to the next slide. In reality, what happens is evangelical Christianity, which is like us, evangelical Christianity is the fastest growing religious movement in the world. Nothing's even close. Nothing's even close. It's dramatic what's happening around the world. Evangelical Christianity is exploding around the world. In Africa, below sub-Saharan Africa, is something like 60% Christian right now. It's exploding. In Trinidad and Tobago, the last census that came out, they gave a census of different religions, and they were all like just a single-digit growth over the previous 10 years. But Charismatics, Pentecostals, Evangelical Church grew by 108% over 10 years in Trinidad and Tobago, where we are. This is what's happening. Now, here in the States, we hear about the decline of the church and all those things that are going on. Let me just tell you a few things. This week, or this, I think within this month, I just read that for the first time, there are now more churches being started than churches that are closing in the United States. There's actually growth. There's actually growth happening. And in the decline that has happened here in the States, one group which has not declined is the evangelical Christian. It is still the same. Same percentage, 25%, somewhere in that range. And so there are things that are really positive that are happening. There's actually people coming to know Jesus in the States. With everything you hear, there's actually people coming to know Jesus. People are coming to churches. There's churches that are growing at this time. Next slide. Keep going. Next slide. Now, this is amazing. I didn't know this. Around the world, of all the evangelicals in the world, 80% of them are charismatic or Pentecostal. I didn't know this. 80% are charismatic or Pentecostal. Next slide. 75%. Next slide. Remarkable growth in China. Click it again. 1947, less than 1 million. Today, you can click it again. It's 100 million believers, evangelical believers. Do you realize China has the same number of evangelical believers as the United States? They're poised to become the largest Christian nation in the world. China. It's incredible. It is something like 10 to 15,000 people a day are turning to Jesus in China. I could just talk to you about this all day, but I'm only going to give you about one more. Indonesia, the largest Muslim country in the world. And you know, we're told that it's hard to get Muslims to respond to Jesus. The largest Muslim country in the world, Indonesia. Incredible persecution going on there. I have a video clip put out by the Muslims in Indonesia. They're trying to raise money. They're panicking because they say in Indonesia, a Muslim is turning to Jesus every 15 seconds. I watched this promotional video for the Muslims in Indonesia trying to raise money. They want to have television and radio because they believe that's the problem because the Christians have those things. So they're trying to raise money for those. And I'm watching this video and I'm going, are you serious? This is a promotion for Jesus. They're talking about people are in desperate places. They call a helpline and they turn to Jesus and he has their answers. I mean, this is good. They're missing the point. But I want you to know, around the world, in the midst of everything that's going on, Christianity is exploding. There are members of ISIS turning to Jesus. There are jihadists turning to Jesus. In Turkey, they say 30% of those who come to Jesus have had a dream or a vision of Jesus and respond to him. There's places where Christians can't go in, where missionaries can't go in, where there's no churches, no Bibles. But the King of the universe says, that's okay. I'm King of the universe. I can go anywhere. And he's reaching down and touching lives. Next slide. Next slide. See, I like Coca-Cola's philosophy because there's only like two countries in the world where Coke cannot be right now. But their philosophy is this. Next slide. A can of Coke in the hand of every person on the planet. Now, can't you see that and think, that's what we ought to have? Jesus in every hand of every person in the world. A Bible in every hand of every person in the world. Next slide. And so with this, keep going. There's many ways that Coke is delivered around the world. Next slide. Next slide. Next slide. Keep going. Just keep going. There's several of these. This 1040 window. From the United States right now, there's only 35 to 40,000 full-time missionaries. My wife and I are two of those. That's all. Out of 300 and some million people in this country, there's only about 35 to 40,000 full-time missionaries. So where are the missionaries coming from? They're coming from all over the world. From China, they're estimating next 15 years that as many as 50,000 missionaries will be sent, especially into this area that is the hardest to reach. It's incredible what God is doing, and you're part of that. Next slide. Next slide. Next. Next. Now, I want to talk for just a couple minutes about seeing the harvest, because the other principle that really grips our heart is there's no unreachable people and no unreachable places. Can you say no unreachable people? Now, stop. You got to work with me on this. I don't want you to say no unreachable people. I want you to say it like you mean it, because we're talking about the King of the universe. And he says there's no unreachable people. Say, no unreachable people. No unreachable. Much better. Now say, no unreachable places. No unreachable places. Next slide. John 4. Therefore, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself did not baptize but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again to Galilee. Next slide. But he needed to go through Samaria. Usually they avoided Samaria. These were people they avoided, a place they didn't even travel through. They would go a long way to avoid it, except for when you were in a hurry. So he needed to go through there. So they're going through Samaria. He came to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. They're traveling, walking, traveling all day. They're tired. They stop by this well because they're tired. Next slide. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into town to buy food. Next slide. Now, what happened in this moment in between these verses here is a long story, but Jesus begins to have a discussion with this woman that you're not supposed to have discussion with. First of all, it was one of those women. I mean, she'd had five husbands, and she's shacking up with a guy now. The kind of woman that you tell your kids, stay away from her. And on top of that, she was Samaritan. It's a male-dominated society, and he's saying, would you give me a drink? And she's wrestling with this issue. Are you serious? You're going to put your lips on my cup? You're asking me to give you a drink? There's so many cross-cultural things going on here. But in this moment, God opens up something. And her heart opens up to God. It's an amazing story. Now as we come toward the end, 27, at this point his disciples came and they marveled that he talked with a woman. Yet no one asked, what do you seek? Why are you talking with her? You see, the idea behind the words there is they thought this is a scandal. You're talking with a woman. You're talking with a Samaritan woman. But no one dared ask him, Jesus, what are you doing? This is bad for our reputation. Wait till the word gets out. Nobody wanted to say anything. The woman then left her water pot and went her way into the city and said to the men, next slide, come see a man who told me all things that I ever did. Could this be the Christ? That's a good thing? Would you want somebody to tell everything you've ever done? For it was good. Everything she'd done was revealed, but she didn't feel condemned. Verse 30, then they went out of the city and came to him. In the meantime, his disciples urged him, saying, Rabbi, eat. But he said to them, I have food to eat of which you do not know. Next slide. Therefore, the disciples said to one another, has anyone brought him anything to eat? They're a little slow here. Next slide. We're going to skip again. Jesus makes, in those intervening verses, Jesus makes an interesting comment. So he says, I have food you don't know about, and my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. And he says, listen, the fields are ripe for harvest. Don't say 3 more months. It's happening right now. But he says, look up and see it. He says, look up and see it. Now, 39, and many of the Samaritans of the city believed in him because of the word the woman who testified, he told me all that I ever did. Verse 40, so when the Samaritans had come to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed there 2 days. Next slide. And many more believed because of his own word. And 42, then they said to the woman, now we believe, not because of what you said, for we ourselves have heard him, and we know that this is indeed the Christ, the Savior of the world. Next slide. This was not a planned missions trip to Samaria. They were just passing through. The end of the story shows great revival in this town. Most of the town responds to God in this town. However, the disciples did not see what God was doing in the town. They went into this town to buy food for lunch. They stopped at Burger King, got a few things. They had to stop a Quick Trip because somebody wanted something different to drink. And they're coming out. But while they're in there, they didn't see anything. They didn't come out and say to Jesus, you wouldn't believe it. I think this town's ready for revival. And when they come out, they see this woman. She is turning her heart to God right in front of them. And they said, what are you doing talking to this woman? They didn't even see it then. How can it be that God is touching hearts right around them and they miss it? They missed it. Part of it has to do with how we see the world around us. We come with a preconceived idea, and sometimes, even though it doesn't come out of our mouth, we believe there's unreachable people and unreachable places. I can tell you the disciples believed this was an unreachable place, and that woman was an unreachable person. They didn't see the possibility that God could do something in her life. Next slide. Why do you think the disciples did not see the harvest in this town? That's the question that just grips me. The King of the universe is breaking through in a city, and the city is responding to Jesus, and the disciples missed it. Next slide. I'll tell you 4 stories. One of the churches that we work with is a church in this Hindu area, 95% Hindu. It's a church of about 60, 70 people. When we first started working with them, almost 6 years ago, they had had really nobody saved in several years. And they were really concerned about this. And as they tell the story now, they said they looked at their neighbors, these Hindu families all around the church, and they viewed them as unreachable. They're hard. It's hard to reach Hindus. Because even if you get them to open up, they're not going to come into the building. God altered their concept. And a day came when they started to believe there's no unreachable people and no unreachable places. And I can tell you today, every house in that whole area has had people from the church inside praying with every single person in their community. And God's opening things up. They would tell you today, they're our friends, they would tell you today, it's because their concept changed and they believed there's no unreachable people, no unreachable places. So this church of 60, 70 people had started a Christmas fair, but they determined we're going to do it for the community, this year, church of 60 or 70, in five-hour period of time, served over 1,400 people, mainly Hindus. They flock to the church. They won't come inside. They flock to the church. Next slide. They come at different points. We know we served over 1,000 adults. That's how many plates. And we had 300 to 400 children. That doesn't count any of the staff or anything else. Next slide. Pam reads the Christmas story to Hindu children. This year, I think, was reading to 300 to 400 children. They sit around. They're so attentive. They love the story. Think about this. Reading the Christmas story to Hindu children, and they love it. Before I finish this church, the area I told you has 100% Hindu, they wanted to start a Sunday school over there. There's no Christian homes. They went to a Hindu home, and they said, sure, it'd be great. You can do your Sunday school right here in our house. They're doing Sunday school and VBS at a house that's a Hindu family. They have Hindu gods on the door, but they're teaching Jesus right there. They want to do an open-air meeting. No Christians. They found a home, and they said, sure, you can do it right here. You can do it right here. When it was over, he said to me, he says, this was great. Can we do it again tomorrow night? This is a Hindu. Next slide. Pam's reading. Next slide. Gave out, these are food boxes. They call them hampers there. Well over 100 of those were given out to families. Had drawings. Next slide. Next slide. Now just before we go on to the story, just think about that. A church of 60 or 70 is touching over 1,400 Hindus, mainly Hindus. It's just amazing what the King of the Universe is doing. Yeah, and our students were there helping to serve. This is Stryker. Stryker is a Rastafarian. Rastafarians out of Jamaica, you know, Bob Marley, counterculture. Rastafarians believe it's the white man that keeps the black man down, especially if they're smoking their herbs, you know. We were walking by. This is the former high priest of this Rasta sanctuary. We were walking by. This is in a squatter area, and I was invited in. And the pastor's wife says, I don't know if you can do that. And they talked about it and talked about the pastor going in with me. And they said, well, I think you can go in. You're an American, but I don't know if it's good for us to go in there, be seen going in there. I said, listen, it's okay. I'll just go in. They invited me. They invited me into their sanctuary. I took the pastor with me, and I said, we're going to go in, get a tour, and on our way back, we're going to prayer walk. Every place we put our foot, we're claiming it for the Lord. I can tell you this. I have prayer walked inside this Rasta sanctuary so many times, I can't even keep track. Every time we go by, they invite us in. He's a friend. This guy's a friend. I go in and see him. He lets us take pictures. Next slide. Our girls that were with us, picture with him. They want us to come in. They just don't know we're prayer walking. I don't know what's going on. I've got an invitation. I don't know when it's going to happen to meet with the priest. And I've got an invitation for their big feast, which is their big service and everything. And it's got to be the timing of the Lord. But Rastas don't like white people. And I have probably five or six Rastas that like us. And you would look, and the church in Trinidad would say, Rastas are unreachable. But there's no unreachable people. There's no unreachable places. A friend of mine, Open Bible pastor, says, if there's a place they say Christians and Americans can't go, that's where I'm going. He's gone North Korea, all over. Amazing stories. No unreachable people, no unreachable places. Next slide. Of all things in Trinidad and Tobago, there are Syrians. And a lot of the Syrians, they either have big businesses or they're running food vendor carts. This is Betro. Betro is from Syria. He actually lived in the States, got kicked out. He's living there. His family is fighting over in Syria right now. All the Syrians are Christians, but none of them go to church. I was talking to Betro about that one day. He says, well, for the Syrians, money is their God. Now, he forgot he told me this. But he says, money is their God. But I want you to know that now getting lamb gyros from Betro and having deep talks about politics, about the war, about government, about religions. This guy is my friend. He has my phone number. He texts me. I'm a friend of him and his family and his wife and daughter. And God is opening up incredible opportunities. In fact, I now know, he works all the time, I now know a way to get him to church. He called us on Christmas Eve. He wanted to go to church with us on Christmas, but we were going to church 2.5 hours away. But God has opened up something we never thought was possible. Next slide. This guy, I just got to tell you this, he doesn't let me pay anymore. And if I have people with me, he usually doesn't do that because God's touching his heart. There's something changing in him. And the only thing he can think to do is to give us free food. But God's touching his heart. He loves prayer. Next slide. This is Kenneth. Kenneth was married and his wife died. His wife and daughters went to this church. It was a church that met underneath the house. And after his wife died, he got a girlfriend, had a girlfriend for 7 years. He told me, she was the love of my life. And one day, after 7 years with this girlfriend, the girlfriend up and left him for another man. He said, when that happened, all evil came over me. And he says, I got a gun, and I was going to shoot my ex-girlfriend and her new boyfriend. I had the gun, and I'm on my way to do that. But on his way, his daughters were in church, and he stopped by just to see them. And Kenneth got saved with his gun on his way to kill people. See, there's no unreachable people. The most unreachable person in the New Testament was probably Saul. But the thing people didn't realize is apparently God was working on his heart. Jesus said to him when he knocked him off the horse in the bright light, why are you persecuting me? It's hard for you to kick against the pricks. We've been prodding you. We've been poking you. And all you're doing is fighting it. What? They thought this guy had no interest in God at all, no interest in Jesus. But Jesus was touching his heart, and he was resisting it. I just want you to know, in Boone, Iowa, there's people that will never walk inside a church, but I can tell you there's people in this town who God's touching their hearts. It may not be a traditional way, but I can tell you there's people everywhere whose hearts are open. There are no unreachable people. There's no unreachable places. This is what we're committed to. And this is what we're sharing with you today. Because we believe the message of the gospel is a message for everyone everywhere. We believe that God is touching people in places around the world that you wouldn't even understand or believe. Because hearts are open. In the place where the Boston bombers were trained in Russia, in the place they were trained, my friend was just over there. And for the first time in 400 years, there are first-generation Christians in that place that they trained the Boston bomber. First-generation Christians, first time in 400 years. We're part of something big. We're not part of just some church in Boone, Iowa. We are part of something big. We are part of what the King of the Universe is doing around the world. And it's our privilege, all of us, to partner with him in what he's doing. Father, we just come before you today. We thank you for your incredible grace that has touched our lives. We thank you, Father, that you are so big, that you are above everything that we're seeing, that you have a different perspective, that we look and see the things on the news, but your heart is moved with compassion for people in their hearts. Father, I'm thankful that you're reaching in behind lines where nobody else can go. I'm thankful you're putting it on the hearts of men and women around the world to see others come to know you. I'm thankful, Lord, that you're softening hearts and your Holy Spirit is moving on people. And Lord, we just ask today that all of us in this room, that you would soften our hearts to see our world in a way we've never seen it before. That our heart would be broken by the things that break your heart. That we would have a heart to partner with you and whatever you're doing, Lord, that's what we need to be doing. And so we just submit ourselves to you, Father. And may you work in and through us. And I pray, Lord, this coming year for this church, I pray they will touch more hearts and more lives than they've ever touched before. I pray as they go on this trip to Tijuana, and Lord, as they have their missions endeavors, I pray, Lord, that a heart of missions and touching the world will erupt in this place. Because their heart is beating with your heart. And it's because of Jesus we pray. Amen. Pastor.
Thank you, Mike. Wow, that was powerful, inspirational.